Working Cows Podcast, episode 334. This episode is brought to you by Zoetis.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, recorded exclusively in the C90 Ocean Minerals Studios. And this episode is brought to you by Zoetis.
Let's talk about tools for a minute. Take these pliers. There's not much I can do to convince you that pliers are futuristic or revolutionary. Even if I added sound effects and said,
"Pliers, the future of tool technology."
You still wouldn't think of pliers as anything but reliable and dependable. In fact, there's probably one hanging from your belt. Now let's talk about another tool. One that you might think is futuristic, but isn't. Genetic testing for commercial cattle. It's not theoretical technology. It's proven and valuable today. It's a tool that can help you make smarter decisions about selection, breeding, and marketing. Use it to find heifers who have the potential to be more fertile and stay in your herd longer. Use it to help reach your goals faster and with more confidence. Genetic testing is just a tool. Use it to build a better herd. Get started with Zoetis at beefgenetics.com.
Very excited to be joined today by Nick DeCastro. Nick is with an organization called Land Trust. They are, as I've said before, basically Airbnb for landowners to get their land out there to people looking to hunt on private land. And so taking care of a lot of the ins and outs of that, and we're going to talk to him kind of all about that today. How does this work? What are the advantages to landowners? And how is the sharing economy being brought to landowners? So Nick, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Yeah, appreciate it, Clay.
So, I've had a few different public-private land experiences. One of them was I was working up in North Dakota, on the North Dakota-Montana border, kind of there in the Badlands, and they've got a resident elk herd there. And this, I was talking to the guy that was showing me around where to get to the sites I had to get to, and he said, "You know, I'm pretty sure those elk know where the, even though there's no fence, they know where the public private land boundary is, and they'll run right up to it and turn around and go back the other way." And then I went on an elk hunt, or as I've said, I went on a hiking trip where I carried an elk license with me and a rifle, and you know, we saw lots of elk on private land, but not a lot on public land in that venture. And so, I think kind of what you're doing, is a needed service. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to kind of just share what it is Land Trust does and, talk a little bit about it to an audience of private landowners and land managers and ranchers predominantly.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on and the opportunity to share that. You mentioned you're in Rapid right now. I was actually out there, I don't know, a month and a half ago when RCAP did their convention out there. So it was just out there. Cool town. But yeah, so Land Trust, first of all, we're not a conservation easement. Land Trust is just a brand name. So I know that there can be some confusion there. We're landtrust.com, for profit. You know, it's a brand. So it's always good to clear that up first. But you know, we're a land sharing marketplace for outdoor recreation. So, you know, some of your listeners may be familiar with home sharing sites like Airbnb or Vrbo, and sites like that. Land Trust focuses on more of a private land. So, instead of renting someone's home, you're renting access to somebody's private property for hunting or fishing, RVs, camping, etc. So, just all sorts of outdoor rec. Hunting is definitely where I started the company, and it's probably the biggest activity still today. But we're growing into some of these other outdoor activities as well.
So there's a lot of people that are what we would call concessionizing their land by opening it up to people for hunting. And I think one of the challenges in that in that space is getting the word out about your place, getting your place in front of people who would like to come and use it, whether it's hunting or camping or, you know, whatever, kind of experiencing ranch life, whatever way you're doing it. So I think that's the challenge that people are facing, is trying to market that, trying to get the word out about that. Is that kind of in the vein of what you're experiencing as well?
Yeah. So it's, you know, frankly, one of the benefits of working with a platform like Land Trust, we're business partners with our landowners. So our landowners own an asset, the land, obviously, and access to a bunch of great outdoor stuff to do. But we build the technology platform, we do the marketing, handle insurance, payments, like all the other stuff. And I think that's, you know, we tell landowners all the time, like, this isn't new. We didn't invent something new. You know, ranchers and farmers have, you know, marketed hunting and other kind of outdoor access to their lands for a long time. And by all means, landowners today can still go out and build their own website, learn how to do online advertising on Google and Facebook, and figure out payments and insurance. They can absolutely do that on their own, or they can plug into us and like overnight be, you know, starting their business, kind of like their outdoor business.
What do you mean by handling insurance?
Yeah, so insurance is obviously kind of one of the biggest things when it comes to private land. And so we handle kind of safety and insurance from a few different ways. I'll just start at the beginning. First of all, every guest who uses Land Trust to book a trip, they accept our terms of service. So our terms of service, they hold our landowners harmless. So they basically acknowledging, hey, you know, hunting and doing other stuff outdoors on land can be kind of dangerous, and we're holding you harmless. Second, we're doing ID verification of all of our sportsmen. So before they could ever, you know, make an inquiry or a booking with you, they have to upload their, you know, government ID. We use some third party to kind of make sure that they're actually who they say they are. Because frankly, most of the bad stories I heard when I was starting this between landowners and sportsmen really boiled down to that guest being anonymous, right? They knocked on your door. Look, 8 or 9 out of 10 people knocking on your door are great people, but it's the one bad person who broke a gate, whatever, rutted your roads up, left trash, whatever that bad experience was. And when that did happen, there was no recourse. Like, hey, you drove a, you know, white Silverado. I don't know. Like, there was nothing there to really hold somebody accountable. So that's a big piece of ours, is everyone, we know exactly who they are. They pay with their credit cards. And by the way, after every trip, both parties rate each other. So the guest gets to rate the landowner and vice versa. So you have that all verified by a transaction. And then we get into insurance. So we, you know, we do participant insurance. So, hey, if they step in a badger hole and break their leg, technically they're liable. They've already held you harmless. But still, they can come to Land Trust and we'll cover up to $10,000 medical bills. We self-insure property insurance if they, you know, if they do break a gate or, you know, none of this has ever happened, by the way, in 4 years, bound to eventually. But so if there's any kind of property damage, again, that guest is the one liable. But if for whatever reason they're being a pain, we'll write you a check. I think up to $10,000 per incident. And then, of course, we have $1 million general liability policy that kind of backstops everything. And then, you know, as some of your listeners may know or may not, in 34 of the, like, primary ag producing states, they have what we call agritainment liability coverage. So it's some flavor of, and by the way, agritainment is kind of anything that's happening on production agriculture land. So hunting is considered one of those things, horseback riding, what you name it, fishing, whatever. And they'll essentially, you know, with, again, different states have a little bit different language, but they'll cover you as a landowner, in scenarios, and protect you from liability as well. So, you know, we take a, varied approach and try to cover from a bunch of different angles. Look, anyone can sue anybody for any time. I tell landowners today, like, hey, have you had somebody who's not your family out on your land recently without Land Trust? Like, you're more liable. You have more liability in that scenario than you do inviting them out through Land Trust.
So on these state policies, or who is carrying that policy? You said that they have agritainment coverage. Who's carrying the policy?
Liability limitation.
Okay.
Yeah. So in that scenario, it's actually not a policy. It's protection. Right. So it's liability limitation. So unless there's gross negligence, like you can't shoot your guest, or, you know, if you know that there's a 300-year-old bridge on your property that's being held up by bubblegum, you don't tell people to go over it, like that kind of stuff. So unless there's gross negligence in these 34 states, they're basically limiting your liability at the state level from any sort of agritourism stuff happening on your land. Then our insurance kick in after that too.
Sure. Gotcha. I see. So how did you come to start the company? What was kind of the genesis of the company getting off the ground?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I wanted to use it. So I don't come from agriculture. I grew up hunting, fishing, and doing all sorts of outdoor stuff. Look, I live in Montana. We're based in Bozeman, and there's a ton of public land here, and that's great. Get out and enjoy that stuff. But as you know, and many other sportsmen know, private land offers really interesting and different style of opportunity. And I found myself saying, wow, there's a bunch of beautiful farms and ranches around where I live, and I'd be happy to pay that landowner for the opportunity to go and enjoy it. And, you know, door knocking is not as fruitful, let's say, as it used to be, probably because there's more people knocking on fewer doors. And, you know, as a landowner, like, who do you say yes to? So, that's how it started, and just said, hey, this seems like a marketplace opportunity, good opportunity for a landowner to generate some kind of extra income from this resource that they steward and invest all their time in. And for, you know, people who love the outdoors, a new way to get out on ground that you wouldn't have otherwise, you know?
Right. And how do you recommend people get started from the landowner side of it? What is kind of the process look like for them?
Look, like I said, our landowners are our business partners. And we build ourselves. We believe that we're like a service business. You know, yes, we are a technology company, but we really focus on service. So we've got landowner success managers in Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota coverage. And so these are people, full-time employees of land trusts who are boots on the ground. They live in those markets or live right next to those markets. And they'll actually, if you're interested, you can, you know, call into land trust. You can go to the website and put your name in or whatever, and we'll give you a call. And then they'll come out and actually visit your place. So they'll sit down with you, answer questions. You know, if it's interesting, they can take photos of the property. They can set up digital maps so that, you know, like on Onyx Maps or similar platforms. So if you do decide to host with us, sportsmen get all that stuff. And look, there's no sell here. It doesn't cost any money to sign up unless you're on a land trust. We only make money when our landowners do. So we take a percentage of transactions that come through the platform. So, it's a pretty seamless process. Landowners are going from, hey, I'm interested, to live on the site in days. And our team will do all the onboarding for you, work with you. And we know you guys are all busy people and have a lot of different jobs around the farm and ranch. So we try to take as much of the work off your plate, and, you know, we'll do all that, and then we'll, you know, do about a 20-minute onboarding call once everything's ready. And if it looks good, you set it live and you're off to the races.
Do you have a sense of what it is that makes public land or private land more desirable from a hunting perspective? Is there something that's drawing the animals there, or is it more there's less pressure here, so we feel safer, or maybe some combination of the two?
I definitely think it's a combination of the two. Private ground generally provides great habitat for wildlife. And part of that is, I mean, our farmers and ranchers are stewarding the ground and in that land, and have, you know, a lot of cases for generations. That's really quality habitat. A lot of times it's more in the riparian areas, so it just naturally happens that way. And then, of course, a lot less pressure. Animals, as we all know, react to pressure. So I think it's a combination of those two things. It's high quality habitat, and then, you know, a lot less pressure.
Yeah. Can you give me some examples of different people who've signed up and used the platform and kind of the way that they've deployed it in their scenario?
Yeah. So your listenership's primarily Western. I can give some examples from like Nebraska or Montana or places like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, the Dexters, Bob and Jody Dexter down in the Sandhills, kind of right outside Valentine, Nebraska, have been with us now for a few years. Great family, beautiful, beautiful ranch. And I think they started with us now, this might be their third year. They've got fishing, they've got hunting. They don't have any lodging on their property, but they're only about 15 minutes from Valentine. And so they've been using us, and they've been marketing, turkey hunts and pheasant hunting and, obviously deer hunting, and then fishing in the summer. And I think they're also doing some, ice fishing stuff too. And they've hosted, quite a few people through land trust. I believe Jody said the land trust helped pretty much cover all their property taxes last year. Mm. any of your listeners are in Nebraska property taxes are.
Yeah. Hefty. Omaha and Franklin or Omaha and Lincoln get to vote on your property taxes and you just have to go along with it. So
yeah,
that's kind of how that works in Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, they're a great example. Another one, and we have some, on our website, if you go to landtrust.com, any of the landowners, there's a little button up top for landowners. We've got testimonial videos too from a lot of these families. In Montana, we had the Sheehy family, and they started hosting with us. Now it's been 2 years. They started just with turkey hunting. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of ranchers are like, turkeys. So they're always scratching their head when we're like, no. Don't do that. Like, let's... trust me, we did more turkey hunting bookings last year on Landtrust than anything else.
Huh.
And, you know, so they started with turkeys. They didn't have lodging at first, and they did a lot of revenue, like tens of thousands of dollars in turkey hunting bookings. And then they said, hey, look, we had an older place. I think his grandparents had lived in there. And so they fixed up that lodging. It's not, you know, by any means 5-star or anything like that, but it's nice. And it provides lodging on the property, which is really a nice to have, because a lot of our ranches are very rural. You know, they're an hour plus from town, and there might not be a motel in town. And so having that ability to have some lodging on the place, whether that's a camper trailer or, you know, a barn or whatever else it might be, really helps. And they're doing very, very well on the platform. But like I said, we have a lot of these videos too, where you could just hear it from the rancher's mouth or the farmer's mouth too.
Sure. What do you think are some keys to success? Or maybe another way to ask the question is, what separates a great listing from a good listing?
So obviously the land is, you know, all properties are different. What resources from a both habitat and wildlife perspective? Look, if you got, you know, 30,000 acres and 400 inch bulls, you're going to make a bunch of money because that's a super valuable resource, as we all know. But I don't want that to make people think that you can't have, we have properties that are 20, 40, 80, 100 acres, but they've got river bottom, some timber, turkeys, and white-tailed deer, and they do very well. So, you know, it does, obviously, if it's a flat piece of, you know, rectangle ground and there's really no cover on it, it's probably not really good for land trust. You really do need to have some wildlife resources there, at least from the perspective. And then, look, responsive landowners. So we set the expectation with our guests that, hey, these are almost all working farms and ranches. They're going to need, you know, a day or two to get back to you because they might be out of service. They might be doing X, Y, and Z. But as long as those landowners are good at replying to folks and just being responsive to inquiries and booking requests, and those two things are really important. So the ability to have, you know, obviously the ground itself, you have some, you know, habitat and wildlife resources. Do you have ponds or water? Because we are doing more fishing and stuff too. Do you have lodging capabilities? It's not required. And we have plenty of landowners on land trust who don't have any lodging on the property. But lodging can mean we'll allow you to tent camp, we'll allow you to pull an RV. We might have a fifth wheel that we use occasionally. You can, you know, kind of book with this thing. Or you got a bunkhouse or whatever it might be. That helps a lot. Because when you got people coming from a state or two away, and your ranch is 3 hours from a 30-person town, like, it's really hard for them to book your place if there's no lodging opportunity there. And it doesn't need to be fancy and, you know, all that. It's not a hunting lodge per se. It's just lodging. And then, yeah, responsive landowners.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. One of the things I think that it seems like is difficult, or would be difficult for me at least, is what's the market? Like, I don't know what these hunting resources are worth as a rancher. You know, and it seems like maybe that's one of the things that you guys are also doing, is you know that market better than we do, probably.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, before land trust, that market for as little as a day or a few days access, it didn't really exist at any sort of scale. I mean, look, hunting leases have been around since the beginning of time. So, you know, generally speaking, as a rancher, farmer, you know, you've been approached about hunting leases. Maybe you've done hunting leases in the past, because it's a nice way to make some money. But this whole kind of, like, where we keep the landowner 100% control, they can do it for as little as a day or a couple of days. This is kind of new. And so we absolutely do help our landowners say, you know, evaluate their property, the opportunities, what they want. And I'd like to, you know, just tell the folks who are listening, Landtrust keeps landowners 100% in control. So we've had landowners who used to lease and they stopped doing it because they did not like selling that property right away for a year or 2 years or whatever it was, right? Because that's what essentially you're doing. And with land trust, you get to choose who comes, who doesn't, what dates, for what things, with what rules. So you can say, hey, look, my family likes hunting whitetail, but we got turkeys, we got ducks, we got upland birds, or we got ponds to fish in. You guys can do that. And, you know, this is the kind of, you know, this is what we want from a price perspective. These are the dates it's available, or it's not. And you can say, look, it's the week before Thanksgiving, got family coming in town, we're blacking out the dates. So you're in total control. Like we've heard again from our producers all over the country that that's one of probably the most attractive thing about it is like that control.
Yeah. What have you learned since starting this company? What have been some of the lessons you've learned and some of those things?
Yeah. Well, on that last point, when I first started the business, and again, I don't come from agriculture, so every day I get to learn why I love the business. And I've got to meet some of the most amazing families and seen some of the coolest communities too, just traveling all over the states. You know, owner, operator, production, ag folks value control and control of their business, of their property rights, you know, of their way of life. And I respect that a lot. I originally thought it, you know, money would just be the main motivator. And of course it's a motivator, like income, you know, properties need to be profitable, but it's not the primary motivator. You know, so that learning, you know, understanding that and really understanding the mindset there of like, hey, as long as we keep them in control and we keep the trust, you know, we'll have a good business here. So that's been for sure a learning opportunity.
Let's take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor today, Zoetis.
I'm holding something in my hands. Hint, it's a tool. Centuries ago, it might have been considered futuristic or super advanced. But now, there is one in every toolbox, and we take it for granted. What is it? It's a hammer. Now, what if I told you that the same practicality and dependability in a hammer is now available in another sort of tool? A tool that you might think is futuristic, but it isn't. It's genetic testing for commercial cattle. It's not theoretical technology. It's proven and useful today. Use it to find heifers who have the potential to be more fertile and stay in your herd longer. Use it to help reach your goals faster and with more confidence. Use it to help make smarter decisions about selection, breeding, and marketing. Use it to help improve the quality and performance of your cattle. Genetic testing is just a tool. Use it to build a better herd. Get started with Zoetis at beefgenetics.com.
How has the vision grown, or the scope of what you're doing? How has that changed over time?
So, you know, I always knew Land Trust wasn't just going to be a hunting company. Hunting was the first kind of outdoor activity because, again, it's what I wanted to do. It's a high value activity from a revenue perspective. But I always knew that it was going to be other types of outdoor rec too. So, you know, fishing, we're just getting into the kind of RV camping space too. So there's a lot of other ways to monetize kind of year round if landowners want to give them that opportunity. And I think, you know, where we're going is going to be just kind of like they're a trusted business partner for producers to generate, you know, a lot of different types of non-ag, income streams. So that partnership that we have is pretty close. Like trust is in our name because good old fashioned trust. So as long as we deliver as being a good business partner, our producers have come to us with other things, you know, like, hey, we're getting approached by a lot of people talking about whatever carbon or whatever the thing might be. And because we've built that trust with our recreation business, folks are starting to bring us into some of these other conversations again as a partner.
Yeah. How have you seen this space grow over time? I mean, you talked about this being something you've been interested in for a long time. How has this, just the market in general, but then also the specific market that you're in of providing that platform, how have you seen that grow and develop and change?
I don't think producers and just maybe the public in general understand how big hunting is. You hear a lot of stuff like, oh, there's, you know, less and less hunters, and per capita, there are less hunters today than there have been, you know, going back all the way to 1950. But, hunting is an enormous market. There's going to be 200 million hunting trips taken in the U.S. this next year. You know, this year we'll have serviced like 1,000 or 1,500 of them. And so for our landowners, that means there is an enormous market ahead of them for that. Outdoor recreation generally is booming. That's just all that is opportunity for our landowners. And platforms like ours, like, look, Airbnb, VRBO, Outdoorsy, RV Share, a lot of these like sharing economy marketplaces have really paved the way for us to come in and do a similar marketplace model, but for land and for sharing access to that land. So I think we're going to see there's billions of dollars of opportunity for landowners to host people on their land over the coming years, for sure.
You know, what sets you apart? I mean, why? I don't know. It seems to me you're the only game in town. That's maybe what sets you apart. But specifically focused on the hunting and land access side of it, you are kind of one of the first in the marketplace. Is that right?
Yeah. Look, there's been a handful of folks who've tried before. It's interesting. Most people, most companies that have tried to be in the kind of this space really focus on outfitters. And look, we have nothing against outfitters. Outfitters are service providers, and there's good ones and there's terrible ones. Outfitters will always exist because that's a different service level, right? We're about DIY access. Just like, hey, just give me the permission to go. I want to do it on my own. The issue with going after outfitters is that they don't own the asset. They're leasing the asset from, people who own the land. And so it can be a little bit tenuous when you start to build your whole platform on people who are leasing access to the asset, because that could change. Landowner might sell, or they might change their mind, or whatever else. So we've really focused on going and partnering directly with the people on the ground, because that's a much more durable relationship. But it's a lot harder. It's way, way harder to go and approach producers and owner operator places, than it is to go and try to roll up a bunch of outfitters, but it's worth it, because you're kind of building your house on bedrock there.
What's been the biggest challenge in getting this off the ground?
Well, I think it's that last point. Farmers and ranchers are super difficult folks to reach. They've been approached with thousands of things. They've been burned. There's trust issues there for sure. Everyone's coming down the driveway, either asking for money or for control of their land. We don't do either. We come with like, hey, there's money to be made and you keep control. We don't ask you for any money. But I think they're very busy people, right? I mean, you know this. So they got five jobs that they're trying to do any given day. So getting their attention, building their trust, that is the most difficult thing that we've done with this business, but we've gotten there. We've got 1.25 million acres in 40 states, and our growth on the landowner side is being driven by word of mouth from our landowners, because they're using us, they trust us, and then they feel comfortable referring us. So, but it's hard. It's not just like you could just buy a bunch of Facebook ads and, put every farmer and rancher on a platform. That's for sure not the case.
Yeah. Is the pinch point then acres or hunters, or is it, I mean, where are you focused? I know we're talking to landowners here, but like where would you say is the biggest challenge for you?
It's always going to be land, right? It's always going to be land. That's the hard side.
They're not making
every
any more
of marketplace has a harder side. That's right. Every two-sided marketplace has a harder side. For us, supply is the harder side. Demand is much easier to get. There's way more demand than there is supply.
Yeah. So again, the ball is in the court of the landowner. And there's the opportunity, right?
Yeah, that's what we tell them. We say, hey, look, it's, again, we're not coming to you with our hand out saying, give us some money and do this thing. We're saying, no, there's an opportunity. There's a big market. If you guys want to try it, and you can start it one day and you can stop it the next day. There's no like annual contracts. Again, it's all about control. But there is a big market out there, and we can tap into it pretty easily. You can stop whenever you want, but we should be so good at our job that you would think, why would I ever want to stop?
Right. Yep. What's next, or what are you looking at in the future as far as growth and opportunities and development?
Yeah, for sure. So, that 1 million+ acres is predominantly, I would say, kind of Western, we're based in Montana, but the Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, is a ton of our ground, and we're moving more Midwest. We're moving east into the heart of the Midwest, and then also south and southeast. So it's really just kind of like, it is, no pun intended, a land grab right now, because you know, establishing these partnerships with landowners is kind of the crux of the business. And once you have them, as long as you don't mess it up, like, you know, they're your partners. So we're moving, you know, across the country. Yeah, we're opening up new types of recreation for landowners to host, because as we all know, hunting season is a state regulated time period or window. Mm-hmm. So there's only so many days a year that you can monetize that kind of resource. So that's why I like, you know, camping and RVs and fishing, and we have people booking shed hunting and foraging for mushrooms or other kind of like wild stuff, and photography, bird watching, you know, all this, all these other things. That's on our horizon for us. And I think a big one is what we call farm and ranch experiences. And we've been seeing more and more of these getting booked, but it's, I hate using the word agritourism because I think it conjures up, you know, pumpkin patches and apple picking farms and stuff like, and nothing against that, but a lot of our producers, they don't want to deal with that. But when I say farm and ranch experiences, I mean coming out to a branding or, you know, like some way interacting with calving or harvest or planning or understanding how an operation works, or bringing kids out to, you know, bottle feed calves, just reconnecting with agriculture. Because, you know, I, as I mentioned, I don't come from ag. I think the stats are that 1900, 40% of all jobs in the U.S. were agriculture. And now it's about, what, 1.5%? So I see this farm and ranch experience being a really big opportunity to reconnect the consumer with the producer. And my perspective is that's a really important thing to do to help fight all the BS that we hear, you know, mainstream media, farmers and ranchers are killing the planet, all this ridiculous stuff, is for the consumer to go out, see these places, interact with these producers, and, you know, understand agriculture a little bit more hands-on. And it's a great way to, you know, generate some more profit for the place too.
And then maybe an opportunity to sell them a quarter of beef while they're there.
No, I mean, all joking aside, you're absolutely right. I know we were talking about sheepdogs right before this, but I took my family. I got three little girls, you know, ages 4 to 11 months. And we did a little road trip out to Idaho and visited one of our ranches out there. And they, you know, they got sheep. And so we got to take my girls out, understand how they're running their sheep and see the farm. And yeah, we bought, I don't know, $150 worth of lamb from them. And so we see that even with the hunting side too, is, you know, hunters come out, they meet the families, you know, they hear about the operations, they enjoy the place, they get the exclusive access to the property for the time they're there. But we see a lot of people who are buying beef direct from those ranchers after doing those visits too.
What has been your best source of education? You've said several times you didn't come from ag. What's been your best source of education as far as agriculture is concerned?
I mean, exactly what we're just talking about. So I'm, you know, I've probably booked more trips on land trust than anyone else, because I'm the founder of the company. I need to be the guy building the product and understanding the market. And I've gotten, you know, I've been blessed with the opportunity to meet so many amazing families in different states, and just, they take you around, they show you their place, they tell you how they run their operations and the intricacies of it and why it's different here than in this region. And that's why I see so much opportunity in this platform, is because bringing these two, again, the consumer and the producer together, whether it's around hunting or farm and ranch experiences or other stuff, that's where the education is going to come from to the consumer. Because I didn't know any of that stuff before. So over the last 4.5 years, I've gotten to do a bunch of that. And that's probably where I've learned most from.
How has the company grown over time? What kind of, like you mentioned about how many acres, but what's been kind of the growth curve in the arc?
Oh yeah. So this is we just had our fourth anniversary. So we launched the website October 2nd of 19. And we've, I think, doubled every year. Or so, maybe a little more than doubled every year. This year we'll probably do 2.5 or so times over last year. And again, we've grown to probably somewhere right around 40 states. And, you know, in the next year would probably be a few million acres on the platform. And the best part about that is, our landowners and the revenue that they're generating. So our growth is directly like linked to their growth. We don't make any money without our landowners. You know, as I mentioned, we're business partners. So, yeah, we've got about tens of thousands of people on the guest side, and that's growing very fast right now. We've had some recent kind of national news coverage from Wall Street Journal and Fox News, and It's been cool to watch kind of the reception once people actually hear about us, 'cause we're still a relatively small company, you know?
Yeah. Yep. No, that's interesting. What, did you have a technology background? How has the technology side of this been handled over time?
I am not an engineer. I wish I would have done that. It would have been a lot easier to get things going. I've always been kind of in a sales and partnerships role. So before this, I worked in the advertising business and, you know, so I've worked selling technology, but I don't do coding. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have a great engineering team. And again, this is that big piece we mentioned earlier. Landowners can go do this themselves. They can go build a website and figure out marketing and all this other stuff. Or they can just partner with us and be live in 3 days and try it out for free, essentially.
Right.
So, you know, we've got a good platform that's growing, and yeah, a strong engineering team that's keeping that, you know, scaling.
Did it take some seed funding and some of those kind of rounds of funding that we hear about in technology startups to get going? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is it's a hard type of business to bootstrap. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's implausible. So yeah, we've raised a few rounds of financing. We raised just under about $10 million over the last 5 years, to get to kind of where we are. Now the goal is to build a big, strong, sustainable, profitable business, just some crazy Silicon Valley company that loses money forever. And we're in striking distance of that right now. But yeah, we want to be a big, durable business that generates a lot of profit, for ourselves and for our landowners.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, no, it's exciting to me to see some of this sharing economy come to the ranching side of things. And, you know, this is there's so many benefits to what you guys are doing as far as the opportunities that you're presenting to landowners to get their stuff out in a way that, you know, to the market and maintain control over what happens when and where. And I think it's really cool.
Well, I appreciate that. Appreciate the kind words. And I think, look, as I mentioned, after every booking, both parties get to rate each other. So we read all the reviews, of course. The consistent one we see from landowners is like, we see the word respect and respectful. Mm. And in almost every single review, we've had 98% five-star reviews from landowners people they posted on their property. Mm. And that word respect or respectful shows up in almost every single review. And I think for the landowners out there who are listening, I can say confidently that landowners who've been hosting with LandTrust now for a while genuinely enjoy, of course, it's nice to make the income, but they genuinely enjoy sharing their property with people who place a lot of value on it and getting to see their ground through new people's eyes who look at it with wonder. Like, it's funny. I mean, as you know, you've probably lived and worked on your ground your whole life, and maybe that's happened for a few generations. So it's every day. By definition, it's an everyday thing to you. But I know when I go on new ground and when, you know, hunters or fishermen, other people come and see these places, they're awestruck. And I think it's really healthy. And I think a lot of our landowners really enjoy that aspect of those people out on their place.
Yeah. What's been the retention? What has been retention on landowners? What's that been like for you guys?
Very good, above 90%. So of course you see people sell ground, and you know, unfortunately, sure, you see family issues. So
right,
we have lost some listings because of, you know, some family fighting or whatever, and that's always awful to see. But we all know it's a real thing. And then yeah, some people sell ground, but other than those kinds of incidents, we don't really see landowners delist with us ever.
Yep. What would you say to the apprehensive landowner? I think you've covered some of it, but anything else? I mean, you talked about the respect from the hunters. You talked about, you know, some of the things that you guys are doing on the back end to take care of some of these things. But what would you say to the apprehensive landowner?
Yeah, so I'd say the biggest apprehensions, of course, is, you know, liability and insurance. And we talked a bit about that. And again, we're always, call us or text us or email us. Like, we're real live people here in Bozeman. We'll answer the phone. We'll talk to you. Like, we're not some tech company that gives you a chat bot or something. And then there's time. So again, onboarding a new listing, we try to do as much of it for you as possible. Like, we do all the copywriting, we'll get the photos. We try to make that as low lift as possible. And honestly, once it's up and running, you can run it pretty much from your phone. You know, if you get a new inquiry, you get a text message from us saying, hey, Nick made a new inquiry about, you know, 5 days of whitetail hunting in October for $2,200. And here's his message. And you can call those people from the tractor, from the field, and feel them out. Doesn't sound good, just decline it. You just say no. Or if it sounds great, you accept it. And so it really doesn't take that much time. I mean, if you broke it down, the hourly earnings are probably $500 to $1,000 an hour, you know, with land trust. I know farmers and ranchers don't often think of their time like that, which they should.
Yes, they should.
Your time is valuable, but they should. But, you know, I think the hourly earnings from land trust is probably north of $500 an hour.
Yeah, you're talking to an audience of people who have been training themselves to think of their time like that, because that's the kind of the fundamental ethos of the Working Cows podcast is this is a business. Now, whether you run it as a business or not, it's going to remain a business, and sometimes equity and some of these things are going to eat you up because you're not looking at it as a business. Yep. So you might as well run it like that, and you might as well start to look at all of these things from that perspective. Pay yourself what it would cost to replace yourself if you were hurt or laid up. What's it going to cost to get this done?
Yep.
Pay yourself that. Write yourself a check every year.
Yep.
And so, you know, I hope people are looking at it that way, especially this audience and the ones that I've been able to interact with over time. They are looking at it that way. So, yeah, Nick, I really appreciate your time today.
That's good.
Is there anything I missed or anything else that you feel like really needs said, especially specifically to the landowners?
Well, no. Hey, first of all, I really appreciate you having me on, Clay. I think any opportunity we have to reach producers, we really cherish. And, you know, we do quite a bit of the shows, you know, Farm Bureau annual conventions. We are a Farm Bureau member benefit in quite a few states. We also, as I mentioned, we were at RCAF this year. Unofficially, it's funny. We had a bunch of our landowners who are actually RCAF members. I didn't even know. So I'm just running into people. But we will be there officially. So you'll see us at, you know, Stock Growers and Farm Bureau and RCAF and all that kind of stuff. But if any of this has been interesting to anyone listening, go to landtrust.com. You know, there's a for landowners button there. You can watch some of the videos of some of these families I talked about earlier, hear it from them, you know, the horse's mouth. And then there's a phone number. You call us, you can text us. Like I said, there's real live people on the other end of that. We'll answer any other questions you might have. We can give you an idea of, hey, here's what we think kind of opportunities you might have for your ground. But there's no cost. It's kind of like, you know, why not give it a try? We try to make it as simple as humanly possible. So,
yeah, very good. Nick, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Very good stuff there with Nick. Really a pretty exciting opportunity to bring the sharing economy to ranchers who are looking to open their land up to hunters. So really exciting stuff there. Would encourage you to check out the show notes page for today to look at the opportunities that might be available to you. And very much looking forward to next week on the Working Cows podcast. Going to be talking to Vance Crow. Vance has been podcasting for quite a while, but he's recently expanded the services he's offering to include legacy interviews. And something that's near and dear to my heart, I've done a little bit of this work kind of on my own podcast, interviewing some people who have had a lot of experiences and have a lot of history to share and to retell. And he's doing that in a very artistic way, a very beautiful way, a way that is not for the broader audience, but very private for the family members that have these legacies that they want to capture and be able to refer back to over time. And so we're going to talk to him about how he got started with that and the ins and outs of this legacy interview process. So we will see you again real soon on another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.